grace. The Lord is with thee. Blessed art thou among women. And blessed is the fruit of thy womb, Jesus. Seed of wisdom, in the name of the Father, and of the Son, and of the Holy Spirit. The first class is on women and Christianity. We will heavily concentrate on women's liberation. And the second class is on Rome speaks on church authority. John, very briefly, why these two classes? We are speaking on women and Christianity because the widespread feminist movement, the Holy Father considers one of the greatest threats to the Catholic Church. You notice the first course in Christianity will have 7 parts. The first 3 classes will concentrate on Marxism, which is the root of modern feminism. Then the 4th to the 7th class, impact of feminism on Christianity. Then what the Holy Father says about the dignity, vocation of women, how Christianity is to cope with feminism. Finally, the future of women in the Catholic Church. In the deepest sense of the word, a Catholic feminism. Then, that is for future reflections. Suppose now we begin with our first class. By way of introduction to the course on women and Christianity, it is impossible to describe the ravages that modern feminism has worked in the modern world. Some people think that feminism is just a pious fancy, like other human dreams will pass away. That is not true. Feminism has deep roots in the paganism which preceded the foundations of the church. A strange statement. For the coming of Christ, feminism, we may say, was the culture of the human race outside of pre-Christian Judaism. There never existed, not exists now, a non-Christian religion which is not, to coin a phrase, anti-feminist. When we say that feminism goes back to pre-Christian paganism, we mean the foundations of feminism have a widespread, we may say, universal practice of male domination of women. This is a classy description of either pre-Christian or non-Christian religions. This, I think, is perfectly illustrated. The condition of marriage in the family in the Roman Empire at the dawn of Christianity. Contraception was so widely practiced, was universal in the Roman Empire. The Roman writer has one of his women characters say, "When you have, I have children, I do well, happily, peacefully, do as I please." We have a woman from the first century of Christianity. in the Roman Empire, the father had absolute legal rights to destroy the infant he did not want. So as a child was born, the father had to be brought to the bed of the mother who had just given birth to a child, would give him the child, and went over next to the bed by law was a large pail filled with water. Father looked the baby over. He decided whether the child should continue living. The child had to say, this child can live or kill it. Immediately put the baby, did not want it, into the pail of water and drowned it. And most baby girls in the Roman Empire hear it, were aborted, shall I say, killed his infants as soon as they were born. Another reason was widespread patterns of infanticide. I repeat, contraception and infanticide are characteristic of either a non-Christian or de-Christianized society. Amen. Now this fall, our state will be voting on euthanasia. By now, the official figure is less than 2 million abortions in the United States. The official figure is 14 to 16 million unborn children killed every year. As Christianity goes, so goes the status of women. Another reason for the widespread practice of infanticide was a strong prejudice in favor of male offspring, causing a much higher rate of infanticides than for girls and for boys. Children of the Roman Empire, the time of Christ, were essentially the wards of the men who fathered them. The legal rights of these men were the most important factor in the rearing of children. They remained so completely under the authority of the father, became literally a man's property. The fathers have the power of life and death. Those whom they begot, their absolute power was recognized by all the laws of the Roman Empire. This is one of the main reasons why Christians were so widely persecuted for the first 300 years of the existence of Christianity. Familia, which our English word family is derived, of course the Latin root for family. Familia did not mean, just did not mean, what family came to mean was the Christianization of the Roman Empire. Among the ancient Romans, famulus, masculine gender, was a servant. Familia was a household of servants. What Christianity did to the Latin language was mildly Christianize the Latin language. In the classical Roman usage, a family hardly included the parents or children. It should be reemphasized, the pagan family meant everybody, given household. Familia in the Latin of pre-Christian 7 centuries, Roman Empire before Christianity, for the first 300 years after Christianity was born. Familia was not to be considered a family. It was a household, which would include either servants or famulos, famulus and famula. Men servants are famulos. Woman was a famula. Mother slaves. The whole harem of women subject to the male head of the household. Divorce and remarriage was universal in the Roman Empire. Concubinage was as widespread as a man masculine gender could afford it. The more wealthy the man, the more concubines he had. And corresponding, the more children he had. We have no record of a Roman family for the time of Christ. There's only one father, one mother, and one family. And even among the Jews, for the 2,000 years of Jewish history, before the coming of Christ, divorce and remarriage was Mosaic law. I've said this so often, especially in teaching the non-Christian religions. There's never been, is not now. I am safe in saying there never will be another religion except authentic, bona fide Catholic Christianity, which believes that there must be only one father, one mother, to have one family. Every religion of the world, except, I repeat, authentic Catholic Christianity, believes divorce and remarriage are part of their belief. No single word, Western world changed meaning more than the word family. Certainly Christianity adopted much vocabulary of the Roman society in which Jesus was born. But Christ radically changed the meaning of the vocabulary. In doing so, he did more than change the meaning of words. He elevated these words to a sublimity they had never known before. Until Christianity came into the world, there was no such thing as a family, as Christians understand the word. Although this prejudice was necessary to introduce our course on women and Christianity, as a country like ours becomes de-Christianized, inevitable happens when mildly family breaks down, and on average now in the United States is over 50% divorces of American marriages. Only one remedy, that is to re-evangelize the United States. Many times I'm told by the Holy Father, by the Vatican superiors, what America needs is to be re-Christianized. What do we mean? We mean that it was Christianity that gave women, for the first time in human history, an equality with men which they had never enjoyed before. which they will not enjoy anywhere except authentic, honest-to-God Christianity is still being practiced. Where Christian was established, where women were not only respected but honored, held in high respect, repeat in the exact measure of the strength and fidelity of the believers in sound Christian faith. More believing Christians, Blessed Virgin Mary is the greatest woman who ever lived. As for her, God would not have been, could not have become man. The incarnation began womb of Mary. And as I'm sure you all know, once the incarnation began womb of Mary, God, who had never been on earth as man, began, get the verb, began to be present on earth. 9 months, carried his mother's womb, born at Bethlehem. He was some 30 years, suffered, rose from the dead, went to heaven. But Christ never left the earth. That's what the Eucharist is all about. There's one article of faith. We know Protestant, who understands Protestantism, and is sober and sane. And one Protestant believes in the real presence of Jesus Christ on earth in the Eucharist. Zero, not one. I told them, I think I've said more than once, to my Protestant students, the divinity schools where I was teaching them, 6 Protestant divinity schools, 7 years of Lutheran School of Theology in Chicago, never wanted to give one lecture on Protestantism. They couldn't care less. Pay the Jesuits good money to hear about Catholicism. I love Protestants, but I sure know the difference between Protestantism and Catholicism. Make the book. So 400 hymns in the Lutheran hymnal. Not one single him to Our Lady. Not one. The world since Mary begot Christ had been drastically changed. See this, however, simply opens the door to another question. What happens in a society where Christianity is weakened or even lost? Many consequences take place. But among these, women revert to a pre-Christian, in this case, non-Christian state. That requires an amen. As the Western world became widely Christianized in the 16th century, the status of women changed radically. It was this context that Marxism came into being. Not coincidentally, Karl Marx's family was, quotes, converted to Christianity. What kind of Christianity? Lutheranism. Except for Karl Marx and his followers, there may be no feminism in the world today. Opening stress, therefore, in this course will be on the essential role that Marx played in introducing what I call radical feminism in today's society. That was all the introduction. first said about Marxism. I think I told you I began meeting Karl Marx at the age of 14. Never spoke English at home. Never. Mother and father were born in Slovakia. And since in the 40s, the Slovak and Czech people became enslaved, and I stayed by Marxism. So I learned as much as I could by Marx. I can't understand women in Christianity without understanding something of the most traumatic opponent of Christianity in the modern world, namely Marxism. The sociologist Karl Marx, give you his biography, 1818 to 1883, had developed with his collaborators Friedrich Engels and Vladimir Lenin, in embodying world communism. There are five essential elements to Marxism, namely dialectical materialism, economic determinism, surplus value, progressive pauperization, and the revolution. Marx combined the dialectical method of Hegel and the materialism of Feuerbach. Two words he should always associate with Marxism: dialectics and materialism. Over the years, I've read the books used at the University of Moscow, teaching in philosophy. In Marxism, there is what they call spirit, is a product of matter. It's the very opposite of Christianity. Christianity believes that God is what? A pure spirit. From this, if in a pure spirit, everything else we believe derives. An act of the divine will. Not so in Marxism. Marxism, the foundation of all reality is matter, which means that which can be touched and felt and tasted and seen. Matter is the opposite of spirit. Matter is that which is quantitative, which can be weighed and measured. In Marxism, spirit is pure fiction. On the dialectic side, this means, and this is basic Marxist law, there's no progress without conflict. There must be conflict. That's what dialecticism means. Must be conflict. And the cheapest and lowest kind of conflict promoted by Marxism is between the rich and the poor, or capital labor. The dream of Karl Marx was to foster conflict between women and men in that order. Marx laid the foundations for feminism. According to Marxism, therefore, nothing really exists but matter, which is within itself, its own development. And man is the spearhead of this necessary evolution. Economic determinism holds that the motive in all human history is economic. As goes the economy, so goes civilization. Workmen, according to Marx, creates more value than he has paid for. And his surplus value goes to the employer. He employs the worker to that extent. Employer puts this surplus value back to his business, and this constitutes capital. The lower the wages, more capital for the capitalists. We'll see later on. Let me say a no. Any share there? The most powerful Marxist nation in the world is the United States. The most powerful nation in the world is the United States. Most powerful Marxist nation. Now it's become thoroughly, totally, philosophically Marxified. I know what I'm saying. As part of his theory of economic determinism, Marx held that rich necessarily get richer and poor get poorer. All the foregoing are preliminary to the Marxist hope of a classless society. Capitalism must collapse. The mass will revolt. See the means of production. Establish the dictatorship of the proletariat. After a phase of state socialism, so they claimed, emerged in a communist utopia where no struggles will have, all struggles will have disappeared. The classic position of the Catholic Church on Marxism, I suggest all of you get a copy of this encyclical. Pius the 11th on Divini Redemptoris. The English title is Utopian Messianism. Karl Marx had come from a Jewish family. And of course, had any Jewish faith in God. But he dreamt, as those who crucified Christ dreamt, of creating a wonderful kingdom on earth. That kingdom would then control the rest of the world. So much for Marxism. The basic premise of modern feminism is found in the Communist Manifesto of Karl Marx and Engels. Three names should always be associated: Marx, Engels, and Lenin. Marx created Marxism. Engels and Lenin philosophized. Read writings of Lenin, over 30 volumes. The Communist Manifesto, almost things should be memorized. Anyone know where the first reference to the income tax occurs? Communist Manifesto. His purpose was to pauperize the rich, doing a very good job at it. Marx and Lenin state, if communists to succeed, there must be, what I quote at length, what I gave you in the introduction, of your course. It was Marxist and Engels state in the Communist Manifesto. I'm quoting a long quotation that I think worth making. Abolition of the family. First statement. Family must be abolished. This is the foundation, I repeat, of modern feminism. Abolish the family. Now she's doing everything in its power to abolish the family. Then says Karl Marx and his friend Engels, the most radical flare-up, the infamous proposal of the communists. What foundation is the present family? Bourgeois family base. Bourgeois is a communist title for whatever is the creation of Christianity. Bourgeoisie is a noun. Bourgeois is the adjective. On what foundation is the present family, the bourgeois family base? On capital, on private gain. It has completely developed form. This family exists only among the bourgeoisie. Well, this state of things finds its complement in the practical absence of the family among the proletarians. Public prostitution, bourgeois family will vanish. And that, of course, when its complement vanishes. Who will vanish? The vanishing of capital. Charges will want you to stop the exploitation of children by their parents. This crime will be plead guilty. Parents in communism have no right over their children. This crime, we plead guilty. Marx and Lenin speaking. We'll say, destroy the most hallowed of relations, replace home education by social. Notice the difference. It is not only that the family must be abolished, but education by the family must be abolished. I'm seeing much, much more than words may imply. Your education is also socially determined by the social conditions which you educate, by the intervention of society, directly or indirectly, by means of schools and so on. The communists have not invented the intervention of society, education. They do but seek to alter the character of that intervention. Rescue education from the influence of the ruling class. Bourgeois claptrap by the family of education. By the hallowed correlation of parent and child. And all the more disgusting the more by the action of modern industry. All family ties with proletarians are torn asunder. Their children transformed into simple articles of commerce. Instruments of labor. Are you communists? Reduce community of women. Screams the whole bourgeoisie and chorus. Unquote. Communist Manifesto. The pages of this pronouncement of the manifesto are enormous. Let us see some of its implications. The subject we are dealing with is highly complex. Even to dare think, I can't do justice to it in 7 1-hour and a quarter courses. I'll do my best. But notice, it all depends on who is in charge of society, who has control of the state. who has authority over education, as the nation becomes more and more de-Christianized. The family, called family, loses more and more of its influence even over the children whom they have brought into this world. Why Marxism wants to abolish the family. First of all, let it be perfectly plain. Comes manifesto, states in one declarative sentence, there must be the abolition of the family. And they mean this. As you know now, we have the Lady of Our Lady. What invocation Pope John Paul introduced in the Litany of Our Lady. Queen of Angels, Queen of All Saints, Queen of Martyrs, Queen of Confessors. Queen conceived without original sin. Queen is human in the heaven. Then what? Queen of the family. I cannot accept by repeating, emphasize too strongly, the most important element in de-Christianizing human society is to abolish the family. The family in the control of the state. Marx and Engels realized, and they say, how this will affect the so-called bourgeois society, bourgeois family. Recognize, communists will do nothing less than destroy the foundation of the family in the present-day society. What do they say a modern family is based on? Making is based on capital and not private gain. The family, as bourgeoisie understand it, will vanish. But of course, once capital is destroyed by the bourgeoisie, that's the noun, bourgeoisie adjective. Bourgeoisie, communists understand it as a society dominated by commercial industrial interests. Favorite word of communism, identify the society which Christian principles dominate. However, you will notice that the Communist Manifesto foresees not only the abolition of the family, also foresees the destruction of organized education as controlled by the ruling class of a society. Let's be honest. Is the ruling class in American society controlling education? Yes. And what they want to do is to get control of education so that they can teach the children the reality of life. Real life does not include a God who is a pure spirit from whom all other things are derived. That's why I thought I would quote a formal document issued by the communist government in Russia, 1950s. A privilege of publishing a mistranslation of this document in the United States. The title of the document is Atheist Education in School. I'll just quote a few paragraphs in this document. few documents. They're pretty long. It begins as the first paragraph of this document. Soviet school is an instrument for the communist education of the rising generation. Can, as a matter of principle, take no other attitude towards religion or an irreconcilable opposition. For communist education has its philosophical basis, Marxism. Marxism is irreconcilable hostile to religion. That, my friends, is the underlying principle of so much of American education. 5 years worked for the bishops, cooperating with an association formed by the Association for the Teaching of Teachers, Training of Teachers of the United States. $7 million were spent providing, undertaking this program to introduce some semblance of moral and spiritual values in the modern public schools in America. I then represented the bishops of the United States. City people throughout the country working on this effort to produce some semblance of spirituality and religious values into public schools. Over 5 years, the final meeting was a 3-day meeting at Columbia University in New York. Among the 60 representatives for this association was a diehard Marxist. They broke us up into 10 committees, 6 men to each committee. We met privately in the committee, then 2 or 3 times a day we meet together as an assembly. I sent off for 3 days with the committee on which I was a member. I stood this man, very, very intelligent and very friendly. He put 2 of us together because he was the archenemy, introducing any semblance, moral and spiritual values, to public education. And my questions I asked him, the doctor, of course, do you believe there's any such thing as truth? Sure, truth is what we constantly search for, but never find. And that one man, 3 days, swayed that whole commission. $7 million were spent to vote against introduction and moral and spiritual values in American public education. All these people have asked me, you think there are many possessions possessed by evil spirit? Sure. Oh, we don't hear about that. There are 2 kinds of possession. There's possession of the body where it behaves strangely. That's psychopathologically. In fact, the church requires an exorcist before exercises, and apparently possessed person makes sure the person is not mentally deranged. Another kind of possession. Possession of the mind. this man unqualifiedly was possessed. Learned, intelligent, beyond description. Sentence after sentence that he spoke, he was quoting, paraphrasing Marx and Engels. Marx in his materialism, says Lenin, as such, is as beneficent to hostile religion and materialism of Feuerbach. Communism is absolutely opposed to any semblance of spirit. Communism is opposed on principle to any remote notion of a God. I'll just quote not all of it. Of course, the eradication of the minds of the pupils of these superstitions and prejudices. Belief in a spirit world, belief in a God, in communism means it is superstition, it is prejudice. I hesitate saying this. That's why guess who was the most prominent writer in the 20th century who has deprived millions of their faith